And welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm your host, Dee Dotson.
Lakeshore Public Media is crisscrossing the region, getting an up-close look at municipal government leaders with our new series, Meet the Mayor. Today, we're in Portage to speak to Mayor Austin Bonta. Growing up in Portage, Austin Bonta is a former special education teacher and is the co-founder of Soundtide Music School. Prior to being elected mayor of the city of Portage, Bonta served on the city's Fire Merit Board and previously served on the Plan Commission and the Board of Zoning Appeals. Bonta is here to share how his leadership is putting a spotlight on the community, about World's Finest Chocolate moving manufacturing operations to the city, as well as the growing demand for affordable housing. Today, we sit down with a rising star within the Indiana Republican Party and one of the region's youngest mayors, Austin Bonta, to learn more about his beloved city.
We're here in the region to get to know you and your community, Portage, right? You are one of our neighbors in the region, and I want to start with this. You were elected mayor in November of 2023. And prior to that, you've served on the Fire Merit Board, yeah. And you were on the Planning Commission as well, correct?
Yes.
Take a moment to tell our listening audience and our viewing audience, what motivated you to get into city government?
So when I got put on the Plan Commission in 2016, if I remember right, I think they wanted there to be a teacher, and I was a special education teacher at the time, and I taught in the Portage schools. And I think it had to be a Republican based on the rules they have, because different boards, they have no matter whether the mayor is a Democrat or a Republican, you have to have a certain amount of party balance on our boards.
Okay,
and so the seats that need to be filled. So they were like, well, we're looking for a Republican teacher. And there's more Republican teachers than maybe, you might guess. But I was kind of known because I had volunteered for some people's campaigns and whatnot. So I got put on the Plan Commission. And like a lot of people on various city boards here or anywhere, you kind of have to learn as you go. You learn from being on it. And my first year on the Plan Commission was a whole lot to learn. But the interesting thing for me is that by my sixth year on the Plan Commission, I was the second most senior member of the board.
Wow.
There was a lot of turnover over three administrations.
Wow.
And I ended up being something of a, if not a mentor, somebody who helped other people who got put on the board understand how the board works.
So let me ask you, so you are among the newest crop of political leaders here in the region to use Facebook to communicate with the community, and you are quite active, I might add.
That's true.
Using it. And it seems to be a departure from what we have seen in the past here in the city of Portage. And what I find most interesting about your usage of Facebook is that you respond in real time.
Pretty close when I can, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're quite busy, but you respond in real time. And I also note that you get or find answers to questions from community members in almost real time. And if you cannot, and you will even note in your Facebook post, I can't find the answer right now, but give me a moment, and then you will come back and post or contact the community member directly and say, this is what you need to do, or these are the steps, or this is the person that you want to talk to. So I want to ask you, is that what endears you? Is that what makes your administration, your leadership stand out in the city of Portage?
That's a great question. And I think that for me, I think that I think in a lot of ways, not just in Portage, not just in the region, but I think everywhere, I think social media has in many ways replaced or made up for a lack of the sort of neighborhood gossip and sort of neighborhood
talk
that we used to have. So
right.
I don't know how far back in time you gotta, go, but in my mind, me being in the five or six Portage community groups, Portage 411 is probably the biggest, but there's also the What's Happened in Portage,
right.
And the and every community in Northwest Indiana has a couple of those Facebook, groups, what have you.
Yeah.
For me, participating in those groups, being available and being willing to be tagged, which has kind of become a meme in itself.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
I still go out to our city events. I still walk neighborhoods to check up on people as well. But I think that in an age where people used to basically gossip around the neighborhood, that's really where I think go back far enough in time, a very transparent mayor would be finding ways to participate in all that.
Yes.
So to me, being on social media, and in particular our community groups, that's a way to be where the people are and where information is being disseminated.
Right. And you're able to dispel misinformation as well, which I think is so powerful.
Oh, it's powerful, and I think it's really important, because when the community doesn't get information from the local government, rumors take over. They just naturally do. Right. And knowing the sorts of things, if you can, that are probably going to lead to rumor if the information doesn't get sent out the right way.
I want to stay on social media, Facebook in particular, for a moment. Obviously, preparing for our conversation today, I did a lot of research, obviously, about you, and I did a lot of digging on those forums that you mentioned on Facebook. And I ran across a picture on Facebook of you with the mayor of Gary and the mayor of Michigan City. And I said, how cool is that? I thought that that was the coolest thing. So I want to talk more about how you in particular are working to foster relationships with other Northwest Indiana leaders and how it will help strengthen not only your city of Portage, but the entire region.
Sure. So I really believe very strongly that Northwest Indiana, the region, culturally, economically, not everybody thinks this, but I really take it to heart. I really believe that Northwest Indiana, whether some people want it to be true or not, it functions as one big city.
That's true.
I mean, thinking about myself, I grew up in Portage. I went to high school in Merrillville when I went to Andran. My in-laws are in Munster. We go out there. Mm-hmm. We tie some of our shopping, you know, just because I'm just like other Portage people. Sometimes I have to travel to shop. We're working on that. Good. We've got people who live in one community, they work in another. We've got people who live just on the, think about everybody who's got the relative who doesn't quite live in town, but they feel like we do. So
right.
Northwest Indiana, culturally and economically, we're really one big city. And so if you think of all of the cities within it kind of like as neighborhoods, if you will, we've got to think about how we relate to each other. Mm-hmm. So with Angie and with Eddie, we had a great meeting here in Portage at Longhorn, and we talked about a lot of different things. It's really cool being three new mayors, and
yes,
just kind of, we all had some advice we could give each other. We all had questions for each other.
Okay.
I think our big thing that we're starting with is the fact that we are the three gates to the national park. So Gary is the west gate, Portage is what we call the heart of the park, and then you've got Michigan City as the east gate of the park. And we got a new superintendent at the park, and he's really just come in and grabbed the bull by the horns. I'm really excited about.
He hit the ground running.
I'm so excited about what he's doing and how he's engaged everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What I think we figured out is it would be so much smoother for the three of us to meet the park with like a joint agenda. Mm-hmm. You know, everything Eddie's got in mind for the park, I think is awesome. Same with my stuff and his, you know.
Okay.
For us to approach the park together really as three cities but one plan.
So is that what that luncheon was about?
It's what the end of it really turned into. I mean, we talked about everything from work on our sanitary districts to HR, you know.
Okay.
In my case, Portage, we never had an HR department for years.
That's very true. As a matter of fact, you didn't have the size of staff in the city that you have now.
And if I remember right, you know, when you interview Eddie, I'm sure he can elaborate, but if I remember right, he was like curious, almost as curious as anybody, about like, how did you not have HR for that long? But also like, what is it like building an HR department? And the answer is it's a journey, because you're changing the culture of a city government.
So Mayor Bonta, I want to get serious for just a moment, and I want to talk about a topic that has sparked a lot of concern, and in some ways outrage from some of Portage's newest homeowners, and that is Brookside Subdivision. And when I was trying to navigate and understand what it was all about, full transparency, I was not actually clear. I want you to take a moment, because many of our audience have probably heard about this topic but are not clear on what exactly is going on. So take a moment to share what's going on, what are the concerns with the newest homeowners, as well as what you did with the developers to help bring mediation.
Sure. And if you don't mind me using an example of something else to kind of help maybe compare and kind of see what I'm talking about, we just had a big power outage across Northwest Indiana.
Right.
That certainly impacted the city of Portage. But, you know, people charged the phones and the cars, people got generators, so the social media kept rolling. And I would have, and I tried to make sure that the city was well informed about what we were doing in terms of what the city could do. Made sure that people knew about how the police and the street department were coordinating together to make sure that downed trees, the roads were getting blocked off and the trees were being taken care of. But I got a couple of comments or questions throughout that time period of, why is the power not back on, Mayor Bonta? And I just had to explain that the city doesn't really control the power being on. That's NIPSCO.
That's a NIPSCO thing,
and
right.
We talked to NIPSCO, and I tell people, I'm a NIPSCO customer. My power was out, but at the end of the day, that's mm-hmm. really a separate entity
right.
than the city. So similarly, what happened in Brookside is what I can now say, because I was as confused as anybody at first.
Good. Okay.
It happened where
not good, but
it
yeah.
started with a resident having a complaint or a concern about their house, and they went to the city seeing if it was a city issue. And me, as a relatively new mayor, I like to think I know our city code well enough and what we can do. It was kind of an interesting area to say, well, I'd love to find out. Do you mind if we come to your house? I brought the building commissioner, the planning director, my chief of staff. Well, what I didn't know is that the resident, he didn't just invite us to his house. He invited all of his neighbors.
Oh, so we came and it became a community meeting.
It became a community meeting with okay. almost 50 people there, all with different issues with their homes, ranging from things like crack driveways, issues okay. with heating and cooling in some cases, issues with the construction of the house, issues okay. with some basement flooding. It was kind of a litany, and I could tell right away, not everything was something the city has the authority to address
okay.
or the ability to address, but there definitely is something to be said for the developer being able to address it.
Absolutely.
And so our next step was we took all of the names and the addresses of everybody. We have a fantastic intern at City Hall right now, and mm-hmm. what she did is she put together literally the whole like email, you know, list of everyone, documented all their stuff.
Okay.
And then we got a hold of Lennar, the company that's building Brookside.
Okay.
And they responded extremely quickly. They were on the phone with us that day. They were out a couple days later.
Okay.
And then what we did is we facilitated for them, mostly because we had a building like City Hall. We allowed for residents in the community to come and meet with the representatives from the developer,
wow.
15 to 30 minute segments facilitated by the city.
Oh.
And then they started attending to those issues. To put it simply, when you have modern construction, and this is what I could say to put it as broadly as I can, mm-hmm. in modern construction, there's always going to be issues with new homes. It's the risk
That's
you
true.
Take building a new home these days with the way that not just one company, but everybody's building them. Even the quality and the type of wood has changed since the pandemic.
That's
and
very true.
It's probably not coming back. So when you build a new home, you often have to make sure that the developer is keeping up and communicating with the buyers so that they can fix problems as they arise over the next couple years.
Okay.
I think that there were issues with communication, and that led to people reaching out to whoever they could. And
yeah,
you got this mayor who's available, and we were happy to yeah. facilitate that. And I can say that Lennar has worked very, very quickly mm-hmm. and worked very, very hard to address those issues now that they've got a better communication with the residents, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I want to leave with this, right? So you have made the case. You have shared with our listening audience several times throughout our conversation that you're transparent, that you're on it, that you address things head on, good, the bad, the ugly. So make the case, because I am one of probably tens of thousands of people who currently live in Illinois who are Illinoised, that are looking to make the transition and the move over to Northwest Indiana. So make the case on why I should move my family here to your town, to Portage.
Because the best thing about Portage is what's next. The best thing about Portage is you moving here to our city, or anybody who's
awesome.
Looking to move, you know, to our city. And I don't want to talk down anybody because, oh my goodness, Northwest Indiana, I love every place, and every place can be the best version of itself, you know?
Right.
Maybe it's my special ed background. I never try to encourage people to feel better than anyone else, but to be the best version of themselves. What's so cool about Portage is, yes, we're the largest city in Northwest Indiana. I'm sorry, third largest city in Northwest Indiana, largest in Porter County.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I mixed up the county and the region
That's
for a
okay.
second. But that said, we have so much more land and room and potential. If you're looking to come here because you want to continue to commute to Chicago,
mm-hmm.
or if you want to move here because you want to start a small business or a big business but start small here,
yeah.
I think that this is the most dynamic place in the region and the most exciting spot to be right at the ground floor as we build a city, which is still a very young city, only being founded in 1959. You know?
Absolutely. No, absolutely. So Portage being such a great spot, right? You talked
sure.
about the proximity to the dunes and all of that. So you've got highways, the whole northern corridor with the Port of Indiana. Mm-hmm. And I always like to talk about tourism as an economic mm-hmm. driver, right? So when you consider Portage's lakefront and riverwalk, which we should note for our listening audience, which was a former slag dumping ground that was cleaned up and turned into the most visited unit of Indiana Dunes Park, this the city of Portage is what I'm speaking about, has to be one of Northwest Indiana's best or most successful success stories, correct?
Oh, I would say so. Just to elaborate there, I mean, the Lakefront Riverwalk is one of my favorite places to go, and that's part of our conversations with the National Park, because it's kind of funny. Every week I get a call or a Facebook message from somebody who says, how come we have to pay $25 to go to our beach and nobody else does? And I have to explain, that's because both of the Portage beaches are property of the National Park. They, you know, got their own policy, you know, and then people like, oh, okay, that makes sense, you know, but we've got a partnership with them. We're working on updating our MOU with the National Park.
So what's that?
Memorandum of Understanding. Think like a treaty between us and the National Park, if you will.
Okay.
So for us, that is huge to have those really two very visited beaches. And that's also where we want to work on making better accessibility, you know, to those beaches, and also more accessibility to what's currently our undeveloped north side. So Portage has, as you know, with the highways, 44 million people drive through our city every year.
Wow.
Which is a number a lot of cities would love to have.
They would,
Portage has not, in my opinion, in the past, really thought about how do we make the most out of that and getting the most number of people to come in and stop here, you know?
And spend dollars.
Spend dollars.
Obviously.
I mean, I believe if the average, if you think about it, if we have 44 million people coming through, this isn't perfect math, but if the average family running through spends $45 to $68 while they're here, if that's stopping for a restaurant, gas plus food, or there's an attraction here, we could be talking $3.9 billion just off the highways when it comes to the city. In time.
Right. You know, but that's
We also have, so one of my biggest projects, really one of the biggest priorities we have right now, is our push to extend Burns Parkway and bring it up to Hillcrest Road. That's going to be a $35 million project once we get it going, but it involves building a bridge over Burns Waterway and then connecting 249 to Route 12, ideally right at the Ogden Dunes intersection.
Okay.
What that does is it opens over 250 acres to immediate development and then more in the long term, because between the lake and 94, there's enough undeveloped land in the north side of Portage, contiguous undeveloped land. You can fit the city of Whiting in there minus the refinery. And so for us to plan ahead for how do you build essentially a neighborhood or a whole new section of a city that ties in, hopefully flawlessly, with the national park and the highway, and the we also have something that I think makes us unique. I think Gary has some great beaches, Michigan City has a great beach, but with Portage, we've got some great beaches too, but we also have the waterway. With Burns Waterway running through, the ability to make a riverfront district, to bring in more restaurants, some hotels into that area too, I really think that there's so much untapped potential there in the long term. And then in the short term, we've got a plan that we're working on to make Route 20 more conducive for business growth and also more walkable, if you can believe it.
I want to go back to you in your campaign, because you focused running for, obviously running to become the next mayor of Portage when you were running. You focused on financial responsibility, public safety, and again, you just spoke about this, attracting more to Portage. So I want to ask you, in your short time here being the mayor of Portage, what have you embarked upon to improve the quality of life in Portage?
For us, it started with creating some better efficiency, you know, in the government. I mean, the very first thing I did as mayor, it's not the most exciting thing, but the very first, like, official action was I ended the free dumpsters at the street department.
Okay.
Portage had a policy where you could, anybody from Portage, or in reality, anybody who knew somebody in Portage, could dump whatever they wanted at the street department dumpsters, and it was never budgeted, and it was putting the department $100,000 in the red. We were actually spending $120,000, you know, each year on that.
Yeah.
And you talk about, like, Facebook. That was where, if I hadn't been in the community that way, it wouldn't have made sense to anybody, you know.
Going back to your transparency and sharing.
And that got us to the next day, which was going over the issues we were having with the recycling program, which is to say that it hadn't recycled anything since 2021, and the department was actually running a truck twice, you know, through the city each day, picking up all of the stuff that was in people's recycling containers, but it was all going to landfill, and it had been going to landfill since 2021. Now, there's reasons for that. It wasn't like a conspiracy. If you were, if you had come and watched a city council meeting, it was talked about as a reality at almost every city council meeting. But unless you bring it out into the community in a way that people actually are going to hear it, it's, you know, shocking, you know. Right. But for us, I mean, we were spending potentially $180,000 to give the impression we had a recycling program. And
wow.
In reality, it was all going to landfill. So our next step there was we stopped running the trucks twice. We reformed the way we did pickup. So, you know, everybody's got the two toters now.
Okay.
And then we encouraged people to come and make use of the recycling drop-off at our street department. Now, our next step is creating better accessibility for people who, you know, can't get there.
Okay.
But I guess to speak, so I say all that because I think that transparency is part of the quality of life. Mm-hmm. The fact that people suddenly, I think that there's a myth that local politicians sometimes fall for, which is nobody cares about this minutia. And I think the answer is a lot of people do. Not necessarily 100% or even 50%, but a great right. deal of people in the community mm-hmm. appreciate knowing how the government actually works and yeah. what steps are being taken. So yeah. the first month was very much kind of a teaching, like how our city, you know, runs, you know?
Okay.
Like
that
I say, sense. We also, having an HR department, which took a little bit of doing. I had to find money within the city's budget to be able to hire someone to be our HR director. Mm-hmm. I had to get the city council to vote unanimously because
right.
I came in on a Monday. That very next day was the first city council meeting of the year, and that's where I needed them to do a unanimous vote to be able to okay. suspend the rules, create the department, and then I hired the director on the third day.
Wow.
And so much of that, having an HR department, I mean, it went through everything of cleaning up some of our policies. There were documents that were referenced in city contracts that didn't exist, or we couldn't find them. The union couldn't find them, and she worked, Lynn Graylick, our HR director, did a phenomenal job
okay.
working with all the departments, working with the union to get all that together. We've updated everything from how we train departments in doing workman's comp, because it turned out that we hadn't been trained correctly on workman's comp.
Oh my goodness.
We had issues with a drug testing policy that wasn't compliant with the Department of Transportation regulations, so we were able to put together a new policy that follows those regulations.
Oh my goodness.
We had a major illness policy, which was a really, it still is, a great policy that the city had, which it, and still has. But major illness was designed as a way that a city employee could earn paid days off if they qualified for FMLA time off, which was it's a very neat thing. Most
yeah.
cities don't have a policy like that. In fact, I haven't found anybody that does.
Okay.
But without an HR department, it was time that people could just use even if they didn't have the paperwork for FMLA.
Oh.
So we got it back on track that it had to run concurrently with FMLA.
Okay.
And by doing that, and also, it was no longer something done at a public Board of Works meeting. It was a procedure done through an HR department, which transparency is important, but so is respecting the privacy
of
our employees
individual.
And
mm-hmm.
of the individual. So
that makes sense.
We've also worked to handle that. And all of that was communicated. And I think that what that did is, I think that that was really the beginning of helping efficiency in the departments and updating, you know, what needed to be done. So
okay.
anyway, I think that that's more internal, but I think that you can kind of feel it when
yeah.
something is done.
You can feel a shift.
You can feel a shift, and you can feel it when you come into City Hall or you come into a, you know, department, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Our next step for us was really building some confidence in the city. I think that this summer was a great example of this with Market on the Square.
Mm-hmm.
So Market on the Square, we've had it for years, but it's been a relatively low attended event, you know, each Friday,
oh.
you know, in the summer. So we started, and my chief of staff, she's here in the audience, Leanne Van Curen, she took the lead for dealing with the fact that we had a weekly farmers market with no farmers. You know, we had people selling, wonderful people selling great things like bow ties, and honestly, I buy these little bow, and bows for like your hair, and I bought
yeah.
one for my niece a couple times, and
it's a
great
farm.
You know, we have, somebody was selling equipment for bathtubs, you know, and things like that, which is all interesting stuff,
yeah.
and still there,
yeah,
but we wanted to have some farmers at the farmer's market. And so Leanne took the lead, and we reached out, and we found the person who runs the Cedar Lake Farmer's Market, which is an amazing, if you've ever been, that's
yeah.
just an incredible.
Yeah.
And so we got a hold of Kelly, and we said, would you mind coming out to Portage? One of the things I find interesting is people who don't get out of Lake County that often tend to not know Portage. And I think that's actually one of the biggest things when you talk mm-hmm. about changing the perception of Portage. There's two things that people tend to notice about Portage when they come out. One is just how safe it is. Like, you can just tell kind of the But the second part is how big it is. There's people who I think that we're very small. You know, they don't necessarily know that we're the third largest in Northwest Indiana.
Right.
So she came out and she's like, wow, this place is huge. We can do something here. Mm-hmm. And so she started encouraging her vendors to come out, and she's partnered with us to get vendors who were, you know, part of her with Hebron and Cedar Lake to come up to Portage.
Right.
We also then, we really promoted it, and I can say that we've had a couple hundred people, sometimes, you know, over 1,000 people, you know, at these, you know, weekly events. So this program, this series, Market on the Square, just for example, last summer, it brought in a total for the city of about, for the whole 12 weeks last year, $4,300. We were over $6,000 by our third Market on the Square this year.
That's a big deal, considering, you know, the transformation that you have made in your short time here. So I want to talk about, because we're talking about growth, right? So you have a growing population as Northwest Indiana continues to trend upward with domestic migration, right? And as we sit here today, the city of Portage, or is the city of Portage, able to keep up with the needs of not only the community, but for those that are migrating here? And when I ask you that, I'm speaking of housing and I'm speaking of jobs.
Absolutely. And simply put, that was really the heart of my campaign, was not just the need for economic growth, but the concern that our residential growth was outpacing our city's ability to handle it. I can tell you that we are making great steps to be able to get it. Right now, like, we're good. Like, if you move to Portage this year or next year, you're good.
Okay.
We've been making steps since January and throughout, you know, this year to make sure that that stays good for everybody. Some of the work already began, so like the updates to our water treatment plant that was started under my predecessor, you know, Sue Lynch, but with the same person, Tracy Marshall, running our sanitary plant. Tracy is, oh my goodness, just
awesome.
She knows her stuff, and she just, you know, she knows how to run that plant, and she knows what it needs. You know, I've continued the updates that we need, you know, to the water treatment plant. I know that not everybody gets excited about rate increases, but it's important. We're getting ready for the city council to approve the increase in the sanitary rates so that we're able to properly finance the improvements we need to our pipes and to the plant itself. That's an important step, because it's actually like when it comes to these like loans that you need to actually carry out this work, it's kind of like when you go to the bank. I don't know if you've ever rented a house before. Have you been a landlord before?
No.
Okay. Sometimes you'll have it where you might have like income that you make because people are paying you rent. You'll go to the bank, show them your income, ask for a loan, and the bank will be like, you don't make enough money for this loan. I'm like, yes, I do. And they'll say, well, no, we can't count this income. There's a level of revenue that your sanitary department has to have to be able to qualify for future SRF loans. And so for
us,
we're raising it to the minimum. We've got to raise it, but enough that we can keep up with the needs, you know, for that department.
Okay.
So when it comes to the housing, we're shifting right now in the sense of, well, really two senses. So one, every city in Indiana should have or has to have a comprehensive plan. Best practice is to update that every 5 years. Portage hasn't updated ours in 15 years, and that was a big issue that came up, you know, last year during the election. Was I talked a great deal about the need to update ours, not only because there's grants that you can't qualify for unless you have an updated comprehensive plan, but also because you got to be able to show that you have a plan for growth that the community has bought into.
Okay.
And so for us, when it comes to our comp plan, what we're doing now is preparing for that process to start late this fall and going into next year. But the shift we're really trying to make is going from sprawl to the east and sprawl to the south to really repopulating and building up the core of the city. So I mentioned the extension of Burns Parkway and opening up that land for residential and commercial growth on the north side. But we also want to take advantage of really our downtown, which has so much more room, not just to grow with business, but also to grow with population in the center of the city.
Okay.
About 2 months ago, I had Jim Brainerd here. He's the former mayor of Carmel. You say that and people think, oh no, he's trying to sell you on roundabouts.
That was my next question.
But we walked from this building, City Hall, on foot, we walked from here all the way to Founders Square, and then we stopped at, and we surprised people at the Chamber of Commerce office just to say hello. But when we walked there, he said, Austin, do you realize something? I'm like, what? And he says, from City Hall to Founders Square, that's the size of downtown Carmel.
Wow. I didn't think about that until you just said that.
People don't see it because the way Portage, we were founded in 1959, and Portage was really designed and founded with the expectation we were going to be a suburb of Gary. And we really took off during the 70s and 80s suburban era. Everything was drive everywhere, wide roads, big parking lots. And that's really what our downtown became, big parking lots, wide roads. Not too many downtowns that are really successful have a five-lane road that where the speed limit is 45 miles an hour, you know, going down their main road.
Right.
So part of what we want to do with our comprehensive plan is take a look at the core of our city and start saying, how do we make this dense? How do we make this walkable so that we're not just growing south and growing east until we hit, you know, some end point? Mm-hmm. How is it that we start bringing people into the heart of the city?
Okay. So I'm going to leave you with this. And so you brought up the former mayor of Carmel. And I was going to ask you, because I'm thinking about growth, economic growth, more people moving to Portage. And my concern is infrastructure and the roads. And so are you planning for that, this big boom of so many industries moving to Portage and so many community members from maybe across the state line and maybe from other cities in Northwest Indiana? Are the roads, are you prepared road-wise, infrastructure-wise for
Absolutely.
That?
And that's why we've put a big focus on improving, fixing up, and redoing existing roads in parts of town that are ready for a renaissance.
Okay.
And we've been really putting that as a focus on the money we have coming in. I'll explain that part in a minute. So for example, we towards the end of the spring, Sandy, who works in our planning department, she's the assistant director, she was so excited. And she came to me and she said, I'm so excited. I'm like, what's going on? She said, okay, so you have all the different road projects that we have going on this year. And you have the bids and, you know, you pick the bids. And a lot of them end up being under what you budget for. Because you budget for what you think it's going to cost, but sometimes things come in under budget. So she put together all the money we had left, and it was a little over $2
million. Wow.
And she's like, so we're pretty free on where we can put this.
Wow.
And so I said, show me some ideas. And we looked at some spots, and the first thing we caught was Garryton. So Garryton is actually the neighborhood on the west side of the city. It's older than the city by almost 60 years. Actually a little bit older than the city of Gary, despite the name. But Blake Road and Independence, two long roads that really make a cross, and they're the two main streets in this older neighborhood of town, the oldest neighborhood of town, if not, well, pretty close. Mm-hmm. They need sidewalks. Those roads need to be completely, you know, redone.
Redone, okay.
And so we did two things. I said, could you tell me, and I gave her the list, could you show me what it would be if we did Blake Road, Independence, Cooley, Sherwin, and May Street? And so she priced all that out, and she said, okay, so here's the thing, Mayor. If we just resurface them, you know, that might last 10, 15 years, you know, what have you. We can do all those, or we can make a plan where we can completely redo and make sure that Blake and Independence are done right with curbs and sidewalks, a real drainage plan, you know, there, we can make a spot for that. And then we can start doing some improvements to the other streets in that neighborhood a little each year.
Over time.
I said, that's perfect, because pretty soon we're also going to have the Central Avenue West project going on, which completes a drainage plan on the part of Central Ave that's just north of that neighborhood. We're heading to a spot from a sidewalk perspective. You'll finally be able to, let's say you're at the corner of Stone Avenue and Blake, you'll be able to walk up a sidewalk all the way to Central, then down a sidewalk all the way to the Dairy Dip, and then go Willowdale down to Stone and all the way back to your house.
Wow.
It's really a spot where, for us, we want to put a focus. And like I say, this is a great community already, but if somebody is looking to move to Portage from Illinois or Lake County, we've got some neighborhoods that are, you know, getting ready to be built or are being built.
Right.
But we also have some great homes on our west side of the city. And to be able to see the infrastructure being improved there.
Wow.
We've actually never had a stormwater plan for that side of the city. And with that coming in now, I think it's going to attract a lot of people to move into what's already here, not just have to keep moving east and south.
So, I think that is awesome.
With about 40,000 residents, Portage is the third largest city in Northwest Indiana, according to the latest U.S. Census Bureau. About 1,500 people have moved to Portage since 2010, and the city of Portage is a sweet spot for new residents. With the double-track expansion, Porter County's largest city is expected to undergo more growth in the coming years. Since day one of his administration, Mayor Austin Bonta hit the ground running, working to make changes in the city's long-standing trash policy. Mayor Austin Bonta believes that governing is about collaboration and working together to improve the city.
That was City of Portage Mayor Austin Bonta. You can hear the full interview by visiting lakeshorepublicmedia.org. The full video of the interview is set to be available on Lakeshore Public Media's Facebook and YouTube channels on Tuesday, August 6th, ensuring accessibility across digital platforms. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Media. In Indiana, only about half of 1% of donated blood comes from Black Americans. Doctors with innovative hematology are reminding Hoosiers how vital it is to donate blood, especially if you are part of a minority community. They need help to close the disparity gap for community members like 8-year-old Gary resident Zedrick Hook and others needing blood products. To assist with minority blood drives, Innovative Hematology's Cascade Program and Versity Blood Center of Illinois are hosting a minority blood drive in Maryville on Saturday, August 3rd. Joining us now to share more about the need for minority blood donors is Carlene Heater, Cascade Program Coordinator. Carlene, thank you for joining us today on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Carlene, you're with us today to talk about a minority blood drive your organization, Innovative Hematology, is hosting in collaboration with Versity Blood Center of Illinois in Maryville on this Saturday, August 3rd. But before you share details about the event, please take a moment to share more information with our listening audience about your organization.
I work for Innovative Hematology, and we're one of the nation's largest hematology centers and the only federally recognized hemophilia center of its type in Indiana. We work with a variety of blood disorder patients, but I'm mainly focused on adult sickle cell patients or sickle cell patients in general, is what sickle cell program is all about here. It's just one of the disciplinary things that we have on board.
Do me a favor, take a moment to share with our listening audience, what exactly is the Cascade Program?
The Cascade Program just basically means care for adults with sickle cell disease, an education program here in Indiana. And what we do is we service the entire state of Indiana for any adult sickle cell patient, whether you're a patient of ours or not.
Carlene, what specifically do you do as a program coordinator with Cascade to connect clients with the programs and or services that they may require?
But what I do as a Cascade program coordinator is provide services, or I'll coordinate services. If you need help with the social work department, or if you need help with transportation, you need assistance, let's say you just lost your insurance, we have insurance specialists here. Of course, we have our adult hematologists and our APPs that work with adult patients. Well, you might need physical therapy or even mental health, because a lot of our patients struggle with the fact of just being ill all the time. They might be, you know, losing their jobs. We also have a career counselor here that we can set up that will actually help with resumes, getting in college, applying for loans. So the easiest way to see it is that the Cascade Program Coordinator coordinates wraparound services for our sickle cell patients here in the state.
Carlene, I just want to take a moment to say, to share that that is awesome that your organization offers those wraparound services. When you think about someone, particularly an adult in this instance, that is dealing with chronic pain, who, as you alluded to, may have to take off work for doctor's appointments or because of the chronic pain, but being able to have access to the type of wraparound services that your organization provides, I believe is an added benefit for those that are living with sickle cell disease. So that is so awesome.
Well, it's really rewarding.
There is a wonderful young man from the region, from Gary, as a matter of fact, that desperately needs help from the community. That's 8-year-old Zedrick Hook, who is one of thousands of minorities in Indiana living with sickle cell disease. If you can, talk about this young man, but before you talk about him, can you kind of break down with our listening audience, because a lot of people are not familiar with what exactly is sickle cell disease?
Sickle cell disease is a blood disorder that's inherited. You can't get it, you know, like if you marry somebody and have children. You have to have two parents that would have a trait, and they get together and have a baby, and then that baby is born with full-blown sickle cell disease. Now, sickle cell disease is lifelong, can't get rid of it. We do have medications now that are being distributed that can work. There's blood transfusions, and here recently we got approval to do the gene therapy. It's a disease that eventually attacks all your organs, but now at a young age, we're giving babies penicillin for years, and then that helps. And then as you get older, you can try some of the other gene therapy that's been recently, but it's really expensive. So we're working on, or they're trying to get Medicaid to pay for it to help patients, but it's also not an easy process. It's like going through chemo and radiation for cancer, and it works for some and it does not work for others. So, you know, like I said, there's not really a concrete cure for sickle cell disease, but as our patients describe it, it feels like glass going through their veins. It can attack their hips, their knees, their joints are attacked a lot. And when they start having the pain that's this bad, they can't go to work, they can't go to school, and generally have to have a blood transfusion. And that's why we're campaigning for minorities to come out at this special event to help us collect some of those units. And what we're collecting, I do want the audience to know, will stay in the Lake County, Gary area to be used there.
So, Carlene, I just want to say, as you were speaking to sickle cell disease, unpacking exactly what it is, and at the start you shared that it comes from the mother and the father both having that trait. Can you take a moment to just kind of speak to why it is so important that as we begin family planning, that we begin to talk to one another about our family history? Because oftentimes we don't talk about our family history. We probably don't know a lot about our family history, but speak to why it's so important to talk about family history so that we can plan for family planning?
Well, one, it's stereotype. And just like some people don't want you to know that they have cancer because they don't want to talk about it, or they feel shamed, or they want to cover up. Well, it's been like that for years with sickle cell disease. And so another coworker and I in our school liaison, we go out. So if anybody's ever interested in us coming out to a high school or college, and we do a presentation that talks about, you can't just meet someone and think, oh, this guy is so handsome, and you know, we're going to fall in love and we're going to have these beautiful babies. Well, you need to sit down and talk. You have to have that conversation. And because you're looking at a person, you can't tell they have the trait, and you definitely, there'd be more signs of full-blown sickle cell, because if they're going in a crisis, they would have jaundice, and you would absolutely know that your partner is in and out of the hospital a lot. But just take two people that have the trait, get together and have a baby. They have a 25% chance that the baby's going to be okay, 50% chance that that baby is going to have the sickle cell trait. So they need to, as they grow older, decide and have that conversation with everybody they date. But the main thing is you have that 25% chance of having a full-blown sickle cell baby.
And just so that, to really put context on that, the 25%, can you take a moment to just share with our listening audience, again, what are the challenges associated with sickle cell disease? You know, we spoke about chronic pain. We spoke about a lapse in employment history. But speak more about the challenges that are associated with sickle cell disease.
Lots and lots of challenges. One, there's like stunted growth. Sickle cell patients can't go out when it's really cold. They can't go out when it's really hot. Like you and I, when normally it's hot, we want to go jump in a pool. They have to be very careful because, again, those sickle cells, we all have round cells, our normal blood cells. But if it's sickled, it's sticky and it's trying to go through the veins. And with that, it causes organ damage. The older you get, you start having chronic chest pains and pneumonia. It can affect your spleen, which needs to clean your blood. You start having breakdown in your, like I said, your joints. All your organs will eventually be attacked by sickle cell disease. So it's a grueling disease, and we need help, but there are some relief. And again, that's why I'm campaigning so hard, is that if a patient gets a blood transfusion with minority blood where the antigens match, you know, they can be relieved for weeks at a time, in addition to taking medication and, of course, seeing their hematologist regular, because you don't want to go to the emergency room and call and not have somebody be able to speak on your behalf and say, this person takes X, Y, and Z for pain relief. It's a hard disease to live with, or I want to call it a disorder.
Carlene, so in preparation for our conversation today, I learned a staggering statistic from your organization. Your organization shared that in Indiana, only about half of 1% of donated blood comes from Black Americans. Spend a few minutes speaking more to why it is important to receive blood that is similar to your own and why it's not enough to just match up the letter type of your blood.
I said earlier, our normal hemoglobin A is around, and it goes through. And so with the minority group or each group, there's like a protective coating, and that's what we call the antigens. And so if you take a minority, whether it's Latino, African-American, Asian, those protective coatings match up better. So the body is less likely to view it as a foreign object and less likely to attack it.
Now, Carlene, before I let you go, so again, Innovative Hematology's Cascade Program and Versity Blood Center of Illinois are hosting a minority blood drive here in Maryville on Saturday, August 3rd. And you shared earlier that the blood that is donated will stay right here in Lake County to benefit residents like young 8-year-old Zedra Cook. So take a moment to share all of the details about the event, including how anyone who's interested can register.
We're doing this blood drive in conjunction with the Northwest Indiana Corvette Car Show. They have an annual car show every year. And the reason why I selected this venue to venture with is because they're going to have over 100, usually 150, sometimes 200, weather permitting, lovely, lovely Corvette. Uh-huh. It's a family-friendly environment. And I chose this is because there's going to be a bunch of minorities on site at one time, which gives me and others in my organization the opportunity to educate them about the importance and the need to donate blood. Because as you say, our own community is not well-versed. They don't understand why it's important. So I take this opportunity. We have an information table with information on Know Your Trait, full-blown sickle cell disease, our organization, and how you can receive some of these wraparound services and other educational material on the different ages and stages of sickle cell disease and how you can get help. We talked earlier about people not wanting to give blood because, you know, back in the days they did different things to African American as part of history.
Right.
And so they're afraid. One of their things is, well, if I give you my blood, I don't know what you're going to do with it. I don't know if you're going to test it. So we're there to educate and assure individuals that this is not happening today and that your blood is very important and it's needed. It's not only to help sickle cell patients. We have women delivering babies that need blood that are hemorrhaging. This is for cancer patients, patients that are getting transplants. So there's all different things, just patients that come in with anemia, that this blood can be used, each unit, this helps so many people.
Carlene, I thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us today to share all of the work that you're doing, your organization is doing, not only down in Indianapolis where you are, but across the Hoosier States, educating our community as well as getting much needed blood to those who need it most. I thank you for joining us, and we hope that you get a lot of support at the event this Saturday.
Thank you, and thank you so much again for having us.
To assist with minority blood supplies, Innovative Hematology's Cascade Program and Versity Blood Center of Illinois are hosting a minority blood drive on Saturday, August 3rd from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Higher Institute of Arts and Technology School, 5861 Harrison Street in Maryville, in conjunction with the Northwest Indiana Corvette Car Show. The organizations are looking for all minority blood donation candidates.
To register for the event, dial 1-800-776-4483 or visit www.donate.illinois.versity.org. For anyone locally that may have sickle cell disease and is looking for a provider, you can visit Innovative Hematology Outreach Clinic at Community Health Net, 1021 West 5th Avenue in Gary.
And that's it for Regionally Speaking for this week. Thanks to our guest, and we'll be back with you next week with an all-new show.